Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and my mission every week is to bring you the most interesting people, entrepreneurs, business people that I can find. And these people are excited to freely share their business wisdom, their tips, and their actionable advice with us each week. Hello. And I am so glad that they do. Some of these interviews, most of these interviews, in fact, are so fascinating because there's just so much information shared. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate that from each and every one of my guests. So today I welcome back to the show the fulfiller of publishing dreams, Stacy Aronson, for part three of an extended conversation that we've been having about independent book publishing. You'll have to excuse me. I've been coughing and hacking, and I'm trying to read and breathe at the same time. So please do listen to parts one and two when you can so that you have access to all of the information that Stacy has been sharing with us, and I've been getting some great feedback on these segments. There is so much information that she's sharing that people just don't know about independent publishing or even where to look. And now that they do know, they have the means and the will, I guess, to go kind of seek this information out. So today we are going to focus on the questions writers should ask when they're seeking out book production pros, as well as the huge red flags that they should heed when interviewing and investigating these providers. Now, Stacy has been a trusted book production partner for some of the most accomplished coaches, educators, entrepreneurs, and writers of inspirational nonfiction and memoirs. And she also assists nonfiction writers with developing their ideas into a sound book structure with clear goals. In addition, she writes a monthly newsletter for writers and is the author of the blog, The Self-Publishing Scoop. Go sign up for that, by the way, where she dispenses regular guidance on all aspects of independent publishing. And I will get her to share that link in just a bit. Stacy, good morning, and welcome back to Your Partner in Success Radio.
Good morning, Denise. Thank you so much for having me back.
Well, this is the only time I've done a serial like this. You know, it's
wow,
just
really?
Been, yeah. I mean, I have guests
so
that
honored.
Come back. Yeah, I mean, I have guests that come back, but we're talking about different topics. This is the only time I've ever been so fascinated with the topic that I said, we've got to turn this into some kind of serial. There's just so much information.
Wow, well, that's wonderful to hear, and I'm honored, and yes, independent publishing is a loaded topic and one that mm-hmm. has many different levels and areas of curiosity and certainly levels of overwhelm for authors. So I'm just thrilled that you're having me back again and that I have a chance to share some of the questions and red flags and things that we didn't get mm-hmm. to touch on in the first two episodes that are so important to keep writers from making some huge mistakes.
And costly, very, very costly.
Yes.
Okay, excuse me. Okay, so why don't you recap very quickly about the first two conversations that we had, and then we'll kind of move into this new topic, which I think is so important.
Sure. Well, we did cover all kinds of things. We talked about why DIY and self-publishing are not one and the same, and I'll come back to that quickly in a second. We talked about looking out for predatory self-publishing, we'll call that self-publishing companies in quotation marks, that are really seeking out authors who are looking for, you know, some super package deal that seems too good to be true and usually is. Gosh, we talked about editing and proofreading and cost of book production and, oh my gosh, I think we talked about just about everything that we could touch on except for our topic today. Which is what kinds of questions should authors be asking themselves and asking providers, and what kind of red flags should they be looking out for? So before we jump into that, I think the best recap is just to really discuss why DIY and self-publishing are not one and the same. I mean, because the word self is in self-publishing, writers automatically think that it's their responsibility to do everything themselves. And this could not be further from the truth. What writers have to realize is that if you traditionally publish, there is a team of professionals inside that publishing house making sure that all of your words are polished. You have an editor, maybe two editors, that everything about your book is structured the way it should be, that you know, that the design is impeccable, the interior layout, the cover, that it's been proofread multiple times by other professionals. So there are lots of phases your book goes through with a team of people who are experts. And so when writers think, well, I'm the writer, I guess I'm supposed to be the designer, the editor, the proofreader, that just couldn't be further from the truth. So what self-publishing really means is that you, as the writer, have the responsibility to take on this project in, you know, in regard to hiring the proper professionals to carry out all of these phases. Because, I mean, let's face it, most writers are either professionals in their field, they're prolific bloggers, they're experts on some level, they're novelists. You're not expected to be a professional editor, proofreader, cover and interior designer. That's not what you've been trained for. That's not your expertise. And so as a self-publishing writer, your job is to seek out the best either, you know, single partner, like I perform all of these tasks for my authors, which is unusual in the business, but and other people will hire individuals, you know, an editor here, a designer over here, to fulfill all of these different tasks that are necessary to produce a book of excellence. And really, there's no point in producing a book that's substandard. Let's face it, why would an author want to do that? And yet so many self-publishing authors do that all the time because they're cutting corners. And again, they go back to, I must have to do all of this myself. And so that's what I want to keep writers from doing. I want you to understand how important it is to put books of excellence out into the marketplace. You want to increase your credibility. You want to have an enhanced reputation. You want good reviews. You want people to love and share your book. And they're not going to do that if you're skimping on editing, on design, on proofreading. So today I really want to focus on the kinds of things you should be thinking about for yourself and then the kinds of questions that you should be asking people you interview. And I highly recommend you take down some notes, but I also have blog posts that outline these questions. And if you happen to be here live and you see the little slideshow flipping by, I do have a couple of graphics up that have links, but I will give you the links at the end as well. So if you want to refer back to a written version of these questions, you can certainly do that on my blog. So you can take notes as much as you like. But there are succinct lists of questions and red flags and things like that in the blog post as well.
Right. And, you know, we've talked about this. I fell into exactly the trap that you just described because, you know, as a techie person, you know, I'm one of those people think, I can do that. That can't be that darn difficult. When I started delving into all the things that had to be done to publish a book, I stopped cold. And look, I have a computer science degree. None of that should have worried me in theory. But when I realized all of the different steps, I understood very, very quickly that there was no way in the world I was qualified to do most of this and that I would have to find people to, you know, do the editing. And I could probably do the cover artwork, but didn't want to. And then I thought, okay, now how do I go about finding these people? And that was step number two that hit me in the face, like, oh, geez, now where do you go? So when you're out there on your own, it doesn't matter your technical expertise unless you know what to do and what really probably is importantly not to do. Oh, boy. I mean, it's just walking. It's like, to me, it's like walking off the edge of a cliff and going, ooh, I hope my parachute opens.
You are so right about that.
I mean, seriously, it stopped me. Once I realized that I do have the technical expertise to some degree, but there were so many wide open questions that I just went, I'll get back to this later. And I'm afraid that that's what happens with an awful lot of people, that there are a lot of books out there that are just sitting in their head or in a Word document somewhere that they just got stalled because they, honest to goodness, don't know what to do with it now.
You know what? That is such a great point you've made. In fact, one of the authors I'm working with right now actually said in her acknowledgement, had I not found Stacy, my book would probably sit for another 5 years before I did anything with it. Mm-hmm. So that, I'm not saying that to give myself accolades. I'm only saying that as an illustration of, you know, she's not the first author who found me, who said, I'm so glad I found you because I just didn't know what to do, you know. And
right.
These are people, as I said on your previous shows, I work with a lot of PhDs and MBAs and very intellectual people and people like you who have all kinds of expertise. So it has nothing to do with intellect, and people, I think, make themselves feel bad, and I think you did that to yourself. Why can't I do all
this
by myself?
I was so frustrated. Yep. I was beyond frustrated. I was almost embarrassed by it, which is silly. But, you know, I'm one of those people, I can do this, and stand with my hands on my hips and my superwoman pose, and then I realize I can't do that. It's really, for people like me, that's kind of annoying.
No, I know, and you're definitely not alone. And that's why I'm so glad we're doing this series together, because I know there are a lot of writers out there who feel the exact same way you do. They're
right.
Beating themselves up. They're trying to put a lot of pressure on themselves. And I just want to reiterate, you know, don't put that kind of pressure on yourself. Being a professional editor is a trained skill. Being a professional cover designer, interior layout artist, proofreader, those are all trained skills. So you're not supposed to be able to do those things unless you have trained to do them. And even then, writers are far too close to their own work to ever really be able to edit themselves completely. I mean, yes, you can self-edit, and by all means you should be, as much as you can, but there is going to come a point where you simply cannot see redundancies, things that are missing, inconsistencies, you know, things like that, because you've just been working with your content for too long. And I always like to tell people up front, you know, I do happen to be a fiction writer myself, and I'm a professional editor. However, I hired a professional editor for my novel because I know better. I know that I am too close to my own work. And so, you know, even the most best-selling writers in the world, they all have professional editors. Most of them are traditionally published, but believe me, if you look in acknowledgement sections in the back of books, you will almost always see gratitude to the editor. And I'm talking about everyone from, you know, Stephen King, Sue Monk Kidd, and, you know, everybody in between. So it's something that self-publishing writers really need to think about, the fact that even the most best-selling authors have editors on their side helping them polish their words, perfect the story, whatever has been written. And so it's just something you really can't skip. But the difficult thing is that editors are all different, and editing and writing is subjective. So, yes, there's a huge, you know, set of rules and you know, things that we follow in English in general, but there are also lots of nuances to the language. There are different types of punctuation we can use for the same thing sometimes. And, you know, so sometimes it's a matter of style, but there's also a lot of knowledge that has to be behind an editor's work. And so trying to find someone who is actually good at what they do or does what they say they do, that's part of the challenge, and that's a big reason why we're talking today, is so that I can give the best guidance on how to weed out the charlatans and find good people who are actually going to be a good partner for you.
Right. And that leads me to a question about editors, finding an editor, because there are so many different things that are in play there. And to me, not having handed my manuscript over to anybody yet, I will at some point, but I guess one of my biggest fears going into that, or concerns, if you will, is this person going to really get me, or are they going to try to completely change my work around? At that point, I, you know, encounter my own mental resistance to finding an editor because I'm already doing the what-if chat. Do you come across that? People are going, yeah, but what if? And you have to kind of calm their fears with that.
Well, one of the big things that authors really need to think about is the fact that editors have specialties. Mm-hmm. No editor is going to be excellent in every genre, every little, you know, segment of a genre.
Right.
Some are only going to be fiction editors. Some are going to be nonfiction and fiction, but maybe, like, for example, I don't do developmental editing for fiction because I'm not trained in that. But I will do copy editing and proofreading for novelists. I mainly do developmental editing, copy editing, and proofreading for memoirists and nonfiction writers. And even within that, there are certain subjects that, of course, I feel more connected to and that I can bring something personal, professional, something from my expertise, my professional background, my own studies, my education, whatever it is. And so that's a really good point you bring up, because if you're writing a book that's maybe very technical, for example, you want somebody who's versed in technical writing or who knows a lot about computers or has worked as a virtual assistant or, you know, something. Maybe, you know, that might be hard to find, but at least somebody who really gets it. And I've definitely gotten those questions from prospective clients. I had a client last year who wrote a book all about thinking smarter in a digitally enabled world. And I'm using this example because when we had our first phone conversation, he said, you know, how adept are you at using the computer? How much do you search things out? How comfortable are you with lots of different ways of searching and citing different kinds of things that are technical? But then at the same time, what's your comfort zone with spirituality? Because my book is a hybrid of the two, which is something very different, and that's why I'm writing it, because nobody's really combined the two about thinking on a spiritual side and on a technical side in using technology. And I said, oh, my gosh, that's right up my alley.
I want to read that book. You've got to share
book.
That title with me. I want to read that book.
I will. He wrote an excellent book, and I was so proud to be his partner on it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it made a lot of sense for him to be concerned. You know, I might have been somebody who didn't have a spiritual side, or
right.
I was,
right.
You know, I didn't feel comfortable talking about meditation or, you know, being silent or, you know, whatever different topics he was talking about with regard to spirituality. And it wasn't religion per se, so my religious affiliation really didn't matter, but it was just the fact that was I comfortable dealing with certain topics that had to do with spiritual practices. And so for us, we realized right away we were a great team. And an editor who feels, you know, right away that there's not a good match should be honest and tell you. And I've told people
right.
that before. You know, gosh, I really don't have an expertise in your particular field. So I really think you should seek out someone who does. You need somebody who has that kind of a background or who's worked on that kind of book before. And so that's a great question, because that is one of the big things that I wanted to share with the listeners today, that editors do definitely have different areas of comfort and expertise, whether it's professionally or academically or whatever. And so that is going to come to the table and be very important. And if they've never worked on your type of book before, but have a sincere enthusiasm, it might be fine, but you definitely want to know what that editor is going to be able to bring to your book and to make sure that your voice is going to be maintained.
Yeah, and that's so important. So when you have to tell people, look, we're probably not a good fit, and by the way, I love your repeated use of the term team. That is so important. Do you try to find them some? Do you make recommendations, or, you know, are there times when you just can't help them at all?
You know, I think it's really important for editors to refer clients
right.
to other resources. For me to just say, I'm sorry, I'm not a good match for you, you know, good luck,
mm-hmm.
would not be very helpful. I don't necessarily know the perfect editor for every person. For example, as I mentioned, I don't do developmental editing for fiction. But I have a couple of colleagues who are great fiction editors. So if somebody reaches out to me and they've written a novel and they're looking for an editor, I always say, okay, step one is you need an excellent developmental editor. Once you have that person, if you want to come back for copy editing, for book design and all that good stuff, I would love to talk to you. But here's your first step, and this isn't a task I perform. So let me refer you to these two people. I recommend you reach out to them. If the project isn't a good match for them, they should be able to give you other references. So, you know, and the same thing with nonfiction. You know, for example, writersmarket.com has a lot of references for self-publishing writers. There are editors and designers, and I'm actually on that website, and there's also a guide to self-publishing that's an actual print book. The first edition came out this year, and that's a great resource as well. So there are places you can go online. You can certainly Google, you know, maybe technical editors, or, you know, you can Google your specific word search and try and see what you find. But there are some great, you know, websites online, too, that are directed specifically for writers, and those are two of them. The Guide to Self-Publishing, which is a book, and then writersmarket.com has tons of resources.
Excellent. Now, before we get too far ahead, explain what developmental editing is.
Yes. Developmental editing is really the granddaddy of editing. And what it is if you're talking about nonfiction, you're looking at the overall structure of the book, its consistency. A developmental editor is looking at every chapter and looking at the theme of the chapter, and does all of the content meet the goal and deliver the benefits that chapter name says it's going to deliver. Are stories or case studies that are included in the book, are they within a proper context? Are they actually supporting giving advice or guidance to the reader, or are they just self-serving for the writer? I've had writers do that before. They're just so eager to share things they've done or, you know, case studies they've had that they forget that they're not even within a context in that particular chapter or section of a chapter that's actually going to further the knowledge of that section of the chapter for the reader. They're just very self-serving. So that is a huge one. We're looking to see if paragraphs flow nicely. Do they make sense? Is there enough content to really give a full picture? Do we need to fill out content? Does content need to be deleted? Or maybe it doesn't even belong in that chapter. It belongs in a different chapter. So when you're talking about developmental editing, it's really the whole book, that overall picture, and all of the different pieces, are they fitting together properly to deliver to the reader what the book says it's going to deliver? And is it going to do that with, you know, with a nice flow, with the right kind of consistency? If you're talking about fiction, then you're looking at story arc. You're looking at character development, at plot. You're looking at setting and dialogue and things like that that, you know, developmental editor is making sure that everything is working from start to finish. If there is a climax where they're supposed to be, if it doesn't, you know, it's supposed to happen somewhere, you know, kind of two-thirds in, and that kind of thing. So, you know, how is the book wrapped up? How do chapters end and begin? Is a reader going to feel compelled at the end of a chapter to go to the next chapter? If there are parallel storylines, how are they interwoven? And how do they come together? And is it in a way that is, you know, surprising? Is something given away so soon that the reader will never be surprised? You know, all those kinds of elements are happening in developmental editing. And that's why it is the most expensive editing. That's why it takes the most time, because there are so many elements to be looking at. So there are lots of passes we're taking when we're developmentally editing, because we're looking at different things at different times, you know, to kind of cross-check and make sure that certain things are working. So it's not only chapter by chapter, but then it's looking at the overall and how things flow one into the other.
So once this part is done, and from the sounds of it, that seems like probably the most critical piece.
It really is. And some developmental editors are really trained well and have expertise in that overall picture and the structure, but they're actually not copy editors, which is focused on the mechanics when we're looking at grammar and punctuation and capitalization and all those good things. Some content or developmental editors are also called content editors. A lot of times they're called that in the fiction realm, so they can be used interchangeably just as an FYI. But, yes, some developmental editors will, you know, come right out and say, and this is something you need to know, I am not a copy editor. I am not looking for all of your grammatical and punctuation mistakes. I'm looking at the overall picture of your book. When I'm done shaping it for you and working with you as a partner to get the whole book in shape, then you're going to need a copy editor to then fine-tune all of the mechanics. Now, I, for example, am also a copy editor. So when I'm developmentally editing, I can't help but be fixing all the other little things I'm finding.
I was going to ask you, that would kill me not to correct all those things. It would absolutely drive me bonkers.
Yes, it does drive me bonkers because I am a very perfectionistic copy editor and grammar nerd, as we've discussed. So
I mean, I was wincing when you were saying they don't do it. I was like, how can they not? I don't get it.
I know. You know, it's funny. It's just like any other field. People have little pockets of expertise within a field. And for some people, you know, developmentally editing a novel, for example, which I, as I said, I am not trained to do that, and I would never walk in and tell someone I could do that because it isn't my field of expertise within editing. But there are people who are so good at it. They can see everything. They can sense certain things. And while I do have that ability and I work really well in that capacity with memoir, I just have not taken that step over to fiction because I feel I would need some more professional training to do it. But some people just, they have that, either because they've worked for a big publishing house or they've taken, you know, lots of workshops and they're just very versed in that kind of editing. But they actually just don't have a thing for mechanics. And, you know, that's one of those pieces that might sound like a no-brainer. If you're an editor, you must be good
at it. Well, it kind of does, yeah.
Yeah,
and that's why I'm trying to get you to explain the differences between the two, because it does seem, you know, some kind of level that one person would be able to do both, you know, serve both functions, but apparently that is just not the case, and that's why I'm so glad you're explaining it so clearly, because it is confusing.
It is confusing. In fact, I have a video that it's a fun, brief video, but it talks about what is the difference between developmental content, copy editing, and proofreading, because these are four words that get, you know, tossed around all the time, and people think they're all interchangeable, and they're really not. There are definitely developmental editors who also copy edit, you know, the way that I do. But it's important for writers out there to be very clear when they're interviewing, what exactly do you do as an editor? If you're a developmental editor, what exactly do you do? If people can't explain what that means or what they're going to be doing, that is a huge red flag, obviously. I don't want to jump ahead to red flags, but and if they're a copy editor, they should be able to tell you all the different things they're looking for. They shouldn't just say, oh, yeah, you know, I'm copy editing. A copy editor is going to know exactly all the things that they're looking for. And so you as a writer have every right to say, well, tell me exactly what you're looking for. What are you correcting? What are you trying to find in my manuscript that needs fixing? They should be able to tell you every single little thing. So those are things that you want to
hear. Well, you don't want to hire a developmental editor and then find out down the road because either the information wasn't served up in the beginning or you didn't have the knowledge to ask that there is no, you're going to have to hire yet another editor to come back and, you know, correct the grammar and the sentence structures and all of those things. That would be, I would think, deeply disappointing to a new author, as well as, frankly, irritating. So I think that these are important questions to ask.
Absolutely.
And understand.
Yes, because understanding the difference among the different types of editing is a really big question a lot of people have, and they just don't know, and they don't even know to ask. They just think editing is editing. And
see, I would
really
have made
glad
that
we're
mistake.
Talking about this.
I would have absolutely made that mistake. And then at the end of it, I would have been going, what do you mean this is what? We would not have had a happy meeting, and it would have been my fault because I didn't ask the right questions, or the person on the other end of the team, so to speak, wasn't very clear about what his or her deliverables were. So this is just so important on how to structure how you're going to hire one editor, two editors, three, whatever it's going to be. But you have to have it written down. You have to understand what the questions are, what the deliverables are going to be, and what your budget is. So I'm really glad we're having this conversation. So keep on going. You're doing a fantastic job.
Well, good.
As usual.
You're so sweet. I'll just quickly touch on why proofreading is different from editing. And proofreading really takes place at the end of the process.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I mostly do all print books with my authors. Proofreading is something we do with actual printed proofs. So we've been through developmental editing and all of the copy editing, and we've been back and forth multiple times polishing. And now we are uploading files, we're ordering actual printed proofs. And I can tell you that a printed proof is so different from looking at a book on the screen. Even though it's laid out exactly the same way it's going to look in the book, there's mm-hmm. always a difference when you hold a book in your hand in print and you start reading. You just see things you didn't see. And a lot of times the writer sees things, oh my gosh, I should have used a different name for this case study. I didn't even think about it the 100 other times I've read it until I saw it in print.
Right.
Or, I really want to expand on this a little bit, or I want to change this, or, you know what, I think I want to add a link here, or, you know, whatever it might be. There are lots of things that a writer will see, and then there are things that a proofreader is going to see. So even, if you have a great editor, we're still human. You know, as perfectionistic as I am, I'm still human, and I'm always shocked at things that I find in a proofread. I think, wow, I'm surprised I didn't catch that, or that, that word got used twice in one paragraph, and I usually
catch
that. I've
been there, done
that. For some reason, I didn't,
Yeah,
so
we all do it.
When you're looking at it, in print, that's a whole different thing. So proofreading is really something that happens at the end, and it should happen at least 3 times. And I cannot emphasize this more, because one proofread is never enough. Never, never enough. And big and small presses do the same exact thing. So there's a proofread, things are corrected, the author's looking at it, the author's little team of, maybe inner circle is also doing it. You have a professional proofreader doing it. You all come together, make your corrections. You order another proof. You read it with the new corrections. You find other little things to tweak. It always happens. And, by the 3rd time, you should have a pretty good, solid book going on. But I've even had up to 6 proofreads of a book the author, wanted to, I think I want to rewrite this now. Or, a lot of time has passed since I wrote that chapter. I actually want to add some material to it. So things like this happen, and you just want to make sure that every single little thing is caught. Because as we've just talked about before, one or two typos can trip a reader up and make the reader start wondering, well, what more am I going to find that wasn't done? How is this reflecting poorly on the author? Things like that. So proofreading rounds, they're really important. And those come at the very end.
Now, let me ask you this, and this is just a mild curiosity on my part. I find that when I'm writing something that's really important and I don't want to publish it, I don't want to publish trash anyway, but I will find that if I will just take the time to read it out loud, that's where I find my boo-boos. I'll go, what do
that
you mean, two-two? Ah, got it. So, okay,
yes.
Denise, take that one out. But and two, so many books now are going to Audible, or, there's Audible Disc, or, there's just so many different ways to deliver a book. So I guess my question is there anybody on your team, or do you suggest to people while they're in that final phase of, copy editing, do you suggest that they read the book out loud? Number one, to see how it flows. Because as we've talked about, the written word sometimes doesn't flow well if you're reading it out loud, which means that you may have to change it a bit for audio. So
yes,
it was just an odd question that popped into my head.
No, it's a great question. In fact, reading your work out loud is very helpful. It also takes a lot more time. So to be honest, I don't typically read an entire book out loud because the author is going to be paying for a lot more of my time.
Well, that's why I was wondering if you tell them to read it out loud to themselves.
Yes, absolutely. And there are definitely things that you will catch that you didn't catch. And sometimes, too, I'm just so excited about a book, I may read it out loud to someone. Like, I'm on the phone with my mom, and I say, oh, I'm working on this book right now. You have to hear this part. You know, and sometimes as you're reading out loud, you realize, oh, wait, that doesn't really work, or
right,
I need to fix
right.
that. But yes, reading your material out loud as a writer is an excellent practice. And I know it takes more time, but it is a great way to pick up on things that you didn't realize, like redundancy of words or an extra word or a missing word or things like that that our eyes just automatically skip over or fill in, because our brains mm-hmm. are incredible and they do favors like that for us, except when we're editors, it's not a huge favor if we
right.
skip over a missing word or we skip over a redundant word.
Yeah,
yes,
and I can
question.
See why, because as a reader, I don't read entire sentences. My brain just goes to the pertinent words, and then I kind of create the sentence around it. I'm a speed reader, so I can pick mm-hmm. up everything that's on that page, but not have to read every single word, if that makes any sense. And it's hard to explain it, but so I can see where it would be very, very easy, because I can trick you. You've seen those little things on Facebook where I mean, they look like a jumbled up mess, but if you look at it a second time, you can pick out an entire sentence. And
yes,
our brains just function that way. It is. It's absolutely. And for me, those things are very, very easy to read. So I would make a lousy editor because I'm just skipping through and going, oh,
well,
that made sense.
I will tell you, because I actually read very fast, too. You and I talked about this before,
mm-hmm.
that we both started reading at three, and we've been kind of reading like crazy women ever since.
Right.
And so, you know, there are actually different ways that I read as an editor. I have mm-hmm. to deliberately slow down my pace of reading. I actually proofread with a red pencil going word to word. And I do it quickly, but I'm actually following every word, and that's the way I make sure I don't miss anything,
right.
Is actually having a little instrument in my hand going, you know, line by line by line. I have to deliberately slow down the way I read. Then I also read to digest content, because when you read slowly, you're kind of just looking for individual issues, but you're not really
right.
absorbing the content. So then I go back another time, and I read to absorb content, so that I don't miss the flow of things and the meaning of things and all that. So I don't know if every single editor has this practice, but I know for me, you know, actually choosing deliberate ways of reading is,
mm-hmm.
is one of the things that most editors need to do in order to be able to catch everything and absorb everything
right.
the right way. So that's a great question.
Well, I do something very similar with website content, particularly long sales forms and, you know, thing where we're trying to tell a story or draw the viewer in, or, you know, have them, there's a call to action. So I have to do the same thing, but what I will do with web content is I'll get it on the page, and then I pull it all back out, and I put it in a Word document, and I'm like you. I will print it out, and I'm sitting there with I read it out loud. I'm looking for, does this flow? Does this make sense? Is this a genuine call to action? And what the heck is that extra T doing in Pat? What the heck? You know, take that out of there. So I do the same thing, but it's
yes.
difficult, honestly, for me to, I have to kind of take a deep breath and go, okay, I'm going to do this. It's kind of a chore for me. It's not something I really enjoy doing, but it has to be done.
Yes, it's very important. So I think before we get, you and I, we get so into talking about different topics, which is wonderful, and it's all helpful, but I definitely don't want to miss being able to share the questions that I want people to know to ask, and I
right.
know we're already at 9:40, so I want to make sure that I segue over, if you don't mind, so that I make sure I deliver on what I said I was going to do today. I wanted to talk about some questions that writers should be asking themselves before they start interviewing providers. And you brought up a great question, or a great topic, which was, how would I even know to ask what kind of editor the person is? Or how would
right.
I know to ask this other question over here? So I actually have a questionnaire on my website for prospective clients that outlined all of these things to help people know exactly what they need and what their wishes are and what their biggest concerns are so that I know as a provider how to address those issues. But, you know, I would say the majority of editors probably don't have a questionnaire just like that. So what I want to do is throw out some things that the writer should be thinking about before they even start the interview process. So, again, I do have a blog post for this. So if you want to take notes, you can. If you want to go to the blog post, you can, and I will give the address at the end. But the first thing is think about what your biggest concerns are in hiring a partner or a team, because those concerns need to be addressed by that person. And if you don't know what your own concerns are, you're not going to be able to ask the right questions. So, for example, if you're really concerned about budget, about trust, the skill level, for example, of the provider, maybe follow-through is a concern for you, communication style, finding a desired level of support. You know, some people are very nurturing and gentle, and some people are really harsh and blunt. So you might want, you know, a certain style of personality, the level of encouragement or the level of caring. You know, you've worked on your book a long time. How is that person going to care about your book the way that you do? Maybe meeting a deadline or specific deadlines is a concern for you. Maybe being charged unfairly is a concern for you, which it should be for everybody. I certainly don't want that. And in general, just having a good rapport, or making sure that the person has the skills that you're actually looking for. So make a list of all of your biggest concerns in hiring a single partner like me or a team of people, which a lot of people do. The next thing would be, what am I most overwhelmed by? And we've talked about this more than once and talked about it just a little bit ago, that the overwhelm is incredible for writers. Even the most intellectual and experienced of writers and professionals are very overwhelmed. But make a list of what you're most overwhelmed by. Is it choosing a self-publishing platform because you've heard that there are dozens and dozens out there now, and who are you supposed to choose? Are you overwhelmed by trying to weigh different options with regard to, you know, just providers in general or different kinds of royalties or who do I publish an ebook with or whatever? Maybe you're really overwhelmed by cost of services and wanting to really understand how they're broken down. Maybe you're overwhelmed by finding a trustworthy person, which I think pretty much everybody is and should be, because trust is huge. Or finding credible providers might be really overwhelming for you, because you can Google your keywords and find lots of matches. You can go on writersmarket.com and find lots and lots of providers. So there could be any number of things you're most overwhelmed by. Write them all down, because you want the person or people you're going to be working with to be able to, you know, help you understand how they will take some of that burden away from you. And that's really important. Next, a great thing for you to think about as a writer is you want to kind of fill in the blank to this. How would my dream partner or partners, ... and then you would want to fill in with some of these things. How would my dream partner communicate, connect with my material? We talked about that. What is that level of connection? That is so important. Conduct the editing phase, or perform the cover design phase, or manage the interior book design phase, for example. How would my dream partner or partners guide me through the publishing process? How would they help me write marketing materials, like a book description or a bio or maybe a book pitch? How would they create my ebook version? Maybe you have a lot of bells and whistles in your book, and you want a dream partner who's going to be able to put lots of bells and whistles in your ebook, which is not always easy or possible. How would this person or people guide me in pinpointing my audience? Maybe I'm not clear on my audience and I need help. Would that person be able to help me? How would this person assist me with marketing, if at all, or who would they refer me to? How would the person and encourage me throughout the process? So I know I'm going a little fast only because I don't want to take too much time on it, because I want to talk about red flags and other questions. But again, the the blog post, I will give you the link to it. But those are things you want to think about. You know, you want a partner who's really going to be a partner, whether you have five different partners or one partner, or one person does the cover and interior and the other person's your editor, you know, whatever the combination may be, you want to really be clear on what those people would do for you in a dream situation, because you don't want to be compromising a whole lot when you're talking about your book. So it's just like in a relationship, you know, there are certain things that are deal breakers if you're looking for a life partner. There are other things you'll compromise on. And it's the same thing in business. You know, there may be some small things you can compromise on, because maybe you know that somebody who's a little more blunt is maybe going to help you be better as far as developing your book, whereas someone who's really gentle and nurturing might not be as hard on you as you need, as the person needs to be to help you get clear on your book. So, you know, there are different things that you may be willing to compromise on. The next thing I would want you to think about is, I would be most comfortable if a provider, so I would be most comfortable. Again, we want to think about this relationship that's going to be going on. You know, if you're just working with a cover designer, that relationship might only be, you know, a few weeks long. But if you're working with a partner like me, the relationship might be 4 to 6 months long. So I would be most comfortable if a provider, for example, were given to me by referral. You know, referrals are really important. Maybe that would make you feel more comfortable. And so you might want to seek people out who've self-published before, who've worked with editors or designers before. What about, I would be most comfortable if a provider held my hand every step of the way. You want to look for somebody who is willing to do that. I would be most comfortable if a provider outlined all the services on their website. You know, some websites are pretty slack in what they offer, and, you know, if that makes you feel uneasy, well, then you want to look for someone who's really transparent and explains everything they do on their website. Maybe you'd like someone who offers some free materials to help get you started or to give you some guidance. Maybe you'd be more comfortable if someone gave pricing on their website without having to email for quotes. That might be something important to you. Scheduling a phone conversation to ask or to assess your rapport and answer your questions, that's certainly important. Maybe you'd be more comfortable or most comfortable if a provider offered to do a paid, quote, audition for a set fee or a number of hours at their rate, to see if you like their work and their style. Maybe you prefer having a written proposal with estimated ranges for costs, which is a huge thing, and that's something I do for all my clients, and I think that's very important. You should never go in just not having a clue what your book is going to cost, so that's certainly a good one to think about. Maybe you'd be most comfortable if the person offered like a set fee type of package for services, or provided testimonials from prior clients, or featured an online portfolio to show the caliber and variety of their work. I mean, there are any number of things you would be most comfortable if a provider did. And so knowing what those things are, that helps you know what's a deal breaker and what isn't. So if you find someone's website and you're going, wow, well, they don't give pricing, they don't really outline what they do, it doesn't seem to be that they have like a phone consult available, or, you know, I have to email to find out anything, then that might not be a good match for you if you're already clear on what you'd be most comfortable with. So those are great questions to ask yourself. Another one is, what personality traits mean the most to you in your dream partner or partners? You know, obviously trust is going to be big for everybody, but maybe you'd like someone with some humor. Some people are very, very dry, and, you know, and that might be fine for you. Some people want to be more lighthearted and humorous. Right. The level of friendliness or attentiveness or level of sensitivity or directness, you know, what works best for you as an author and as a person when you're working with a professional? Because, again, that relationship is going to be one that's going to be fairly close for a period of time, and this is your baby we're talking about. And so even though you don't want to be too emotionally wrapped up in it, the fact is that we are, as authors, we are a bit emotionally wrapped up in our books, and we want to work with someone who is going to be compatible with us in personality. So those are things you want to think about. And then the last thing I would throw out there for you to think about before you start interviewing is if a contractor can't provide fill in the blank with your most important priorities, it will be a deal breaker for me to hire them. So, you know, kind of go in knowing what things you absolutely don't want to compromise on, because I don't want you to kind of get swayed maybe because someone's being a bit manipulating, or, you know, that can happen. Sometimes we fall into these little traps. So I think it's important, just like if you're looking for a mate, you know, a deal breaker for me is this, this, and this, and I'm not going to compromise. You know, that might sound like I'm asking people to be extremely rigid, but I'm just saying that there may be, you know, maybe one or two things, or maybe even more, that for you are a deal breaker. And it just really helps you to weed out the people who aren't right for you from the start, because you're probably going to be looking at a lot of different providers. So if you can kind of weed out the deal breakers, it's just very helpful to do so. So that's the set of questions I would encourage you to ask yourself. Make lists. Get clear on these things, because it will really, really help you when you move into the phase of asking questions of the providers themselves.
Absolutely. Now, I have a quick question. If you're hiring somebody like you, who is kind of, I mean, you're definitely a one-stop shop with a lot of resources that you can pull in if you need to, but if somebody is hiring an entire team, you know, four or five people over time, I'm sure that none of this is, you know, most of this is not congruent all at once, but does it behoove them to try to project manage it themselves, or should they bring in a project manager? Because, look, I've worked on things like this. There are a lot of moving parts. Somebody needs to be in charge of those moving parts. So what are you finding that people typically do?
Well, to be honest, you know, the people who work with me are generally working with me for manuscript market. So I'm doing everything for them, and there really aren't any other outside people.
Right.
I did work on a book with quite a high-profile person in New York who did have a team. I was the cover artist. There was an interior layout artist. There was an editor. There was a proofreader. There was a publishing person. So he did have a lot of moving parts. To be honest, I am not sure if he had a project manager, but I imagine he did, because he's a very, very busy person and quite a high-profile person. So, you know, I know that you, for example, you project manage things like this. Is that, I'm right, with, you know,
right,
with books or and things like that. So, yes, if you have a lot of people and you are running a business and you may even be raising a family and trying to juggle other things at the same time as so many people are, it may be very difficult for you to keep track of timelines and expectations and all these kinds of things. So if you do have a team in place, it's a really good idea to have someone like you, Denise, who can be a project manager, who knows exactly what all these, as you say, moving parts are, how they work together, how they have to work together to meet certain deadlines. You know, one of the things, for example, is that an interior layout should complement the cover. So for me, being a cover and interior layout artist at the same time, I'm, of course, making sure that I'm using the same typography. I'm using similar elements, you know, that kind of thing. If you have two people working independently on these two parts of a book and the interior artist has never seen the cover and the cover artist doesn't know what the interior is going to be, usually it starts with the cover and the cover then influences the interior. But if you're doing interior layout and you don't see the cover, that's not a good thing. You need to be able to see the cover first. The cover needs to really be solidified, and then that typography needs to be shared with the interior artist so she can or he can work with that, with, you know, maybe chapter headers and, you know, certain things going on in the book. So everything is congruent. So yes, I think it's an excellent point you make. I'm typically managing the whole project myself, so I know what all the moving parts are. I know what's happening when. I know what needs to be done when, and I'm doing that for my clients on their behalf. But if you aren't working with a single person, you are working with a team, it's probably best to find someone like Denise who knows exactly how to manage the project for you to keep you on track and keep you from being completely overwhelmed by all the moving parts.
Or at the very least, find some kind of a system like Teamwork or some kind of an online system where everybody can kind of log in and check with each other on deliverables. I don't even know if that's a good idea, but it just seems to me that somebody has to be in charge, whether it's the author or somebody on the team who will stand up and say, okay, I know what's going on, and I can pull all this together for you. What, you know, how do we go ahead and start this? But it just seems to me like there has to be a PM somewhere in this process, unless you're working with somebody like you who, like me, is a one-stop shop. So you know, it just seems to me that it would be very, very important that somebody is in charge of deliverabilities and dates and, you know, milestones and all those different things that can get lost in the wash if you're not careful.
Yes, absolutely, and you're very right. And because so many writers today, especially of nonfiction, are writing because they're professionals in their fields or they're mm-hmm. prolific bloggers or they're experts in some regard, and they're running a business. They're trying to enhance their business. They're trying to build a speaking career, things like that. Mm-hmm. So there are so many things already going on that if they have overwhelm with self-publishing to begin with, which most people do, then trying to figure out who's supposed to be doing what and when may just be more than that author wants to deal with. And when you self-publish, you do have to wear a lot of hats. I mean, that's part of it. You become really a publisher more than a writer. And publishers mm-hmm. are wearing a lot of hats, and they're managing all the moving parts. And so, yes, that's a great point that you bring up. And, you know, I'm so used to doing everything for my authors myself. I'm really glad you brought that up, because when there are a lot of people involved, it is important to keep them all coordinated well.
Well, it has to be, because like you say, if the book cover design doesn't match the interior and they've never spoken or coordinated, that's just wasted time and, to me, wasted money.
Absolutely, yes. It is.
Yeah.
I, for example, well, I won't give that example because we're running out of time and we didn't even
know,
get to talk
again.
About what questions to ask.
We will. We're going
to ask providers.
Just so you know, you're coming back a fourth time, just so you know.
Okay. Oh, my goodness. We talk about really great, helpful things, but it's so hard to get to everything, even if we only have a few topics. It's funny.
It is.
Yes.
And one thing that we didn't mention, and it's not even in my show notes, but I think it's important because this is a trend, particularly with authors. Most authors now are, you know, of course, especially if you're self-publishing, but even if you're not, even if you're being published by, say, one of the large houses, the smart thing to do these days is to buy your book name URL if you can, or something very, very close to it, and then you start, you know, posting updates on that, you know, the book is coming, you tag it into Facebook. There's just so many different things that you can do, you know, offer a first chapter. It's very important to have that kind of author resource out there as well, so you almost have to add another person to your team, meaning a web developer who knows how to do product launches. Whole nother piece of cake over there. So, you know, that's something that people need to consider as well. And you can't just slap up any old page. You need to know how to do product launches, or somebody on your team does.
Yes,
so,
which is another that you do, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, we do, but it is important. And I work with a lot of authors and speakers, so I know this. And it's just so important to have that kind of arsenal. Yes, you can put your book on your blog and on your main website, and you should, but you should also have its own little separate home where you can test and you can, you know, get responses from people, and you can work up, you know, all kinds of frantic activity. Yes, I want the book. Nobody does this better than Jeff Walker with his book launch, and we can talk about that. I mean, that book just went into the stratosphere before it was ever published.
Yes.
So, you know, there are ways to do these things, but yeah, we do. But listen, we only have a minute. You've got to come back. Okay, so tell people. You can't say no. So I do this to you on the air. You can't tell me no.
So, I wouldn't tell you no anyway, Denise.
Good. Well, listen, tell people, we've got 60 seconds, but we'll keep on recording even after it stops streaming for a bit. Tell people where they can find you, and tell people where they can find these blog posts that you referenced.
Yes, you can find me at thebookdoctorisin.com. No dashes, no spaces, just the book doctorisin.com. Of course, no spaces in the URL, duh. But anyway.
Well, sometimes there's those little dash marks and you don't have them.
Yeah, underscore or hyphen or whatever. Okay. And to find the questions that I just talked about that you should ask yourself or you should make lists for yourself, I did a shortened URL to make it easy. And so if you go to bit.ly/vital questions. So it's bit.ly/vital questions. You will find, and if you go to my blog, theselfpublishingscoop.com, you can go through the archives and you can find, it's called 6 Vital Questions and 8 Key Points to Remember in Seeking Your Dream Book Production Partner or Partners. So
nice.
That is the title you'd look for, but otherwise you can find the shortened one as well.
And you also created a wonderful bonus for our audience, which is the hyperlink is in the show description. It is also going to be on my website later on this afternoon, along with a recording of this one. I'll probably put all 3 recordings up. So you can find it on denisegriffiths.com. You can find it here in the show description. And do you have a link that you want to send people to? First of all, tell people about this. I mean, I was so impressed. This really great bonus that you pulled together for them.
Thank you. Well, you and I had talked about offering a bonus to your listeners for coming into and listening to this series with us, which is wonderful. And so we talked about having a master do and don't list for self-publishing. So I put together a master list of do's and don'ts. They're in columns. They're very easy to read. And I packed it full of resources for you. So if I say do this, I might have a blog post for you to read, a link for you to go to read an article, a place for you to go to learn more. If I say don't do this, same thing. I'll have an article, a post, something to explain why, a video to watch, something to help you grasp the do or the don't in the best way possible. So that is available on, as Denise said, in the description of the show today, and she's also going to be posting it. I haven't personally posted it yet because I made it exclusively for all of you to begin with. So right now it's just available here for your listeners, and I hope you find it really helpful. It's kind of a mini class on self-publishing, and it's got lots of great references in it for you, so I hope you find it helpful.
I found it helpful. I've already printed it out, so thank you so much. It's a great bonus for my audience, and I know they appreciate it. I sure did. And you did a terrific job on it. I mean, you just kind of pulled this together in short order. I was genuinely impressed, but I'm always impressed with true professionalism.
Thank you. Well, I believe me, the feeling is mutual with you, and I'm so happy. I'm so happy to know you and to be able to refer you to my clients because it's wonderful to have a network around you of great colleagues, and you are certainly a treasured colleague for me as well. So I appreciate you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate that more than you know, and we work with some of the same clients. And I mean, I get emails like, okay, Denise, Stacey's going to be doing this. Wait till you see it. It's like, I know. I can't wait.
That's so sweet. I get that, too. I get, oh, Denise is working on this. I can't wait.
And it's nice to be able to work with people that you really are clear on what it is that they're going to bring to the table. You don't have to stand around and go, well, when is it going to get here? And when it does get here, it's perfect. So, again, I truly appreciate professionalism, and you are a tremendous professional, and you're coming back. Well, listen, everybody, we are out of time. The show is going to be available for download in about an hour. Stacey, thank you so much for coming back with me here today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Okay. Well, listen, everybody, make sure that you go back and you listen to the first 2 shows. Just Google us. Look in iTunes. Look in Blog Talk Radio, Denise Griffiths and Stacey Aronson. Or type the book doctors in, because I use that quite a bit as tags. Make sure that you listen to all 3 of these interviews because they're logical. They go from step 1 to step 2 to step 3, and we'll get to step 4 on the next one. You really need, if you're interested at all in publishing your own book, you really need to follow these. I can't stress that enough. So everybody, thank you. Stacey, thank you so much. Everybody have a great weekend, and I will see you next week.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on Your Partner in Success Radio.